Welcome in to the 48 Minutes podcast on Believe, presented by Bet Online. I'm Ross Geiger, the former NBA video coordinator, having spent time with the Milwaukee Bucks, Phoenix Suns, and the New York Knicks. And I'm joined alongside Bruce Bernstein, our four-time Emmy Award winner, who spent more than three decades at ESPN producing NBA shows, SportsCenter, and soaking up knowledge from the best hoop analysts in the business. And we're also joined by two-time Emmy Award winner, Michael Worldby Freer, who is a senior writer at Stat Factor, specializing in writing advanced statistical NBA reports for various announcers across the league. This is episode number 94, the Evan Fournier episode, as the French sharpshooter wore number 94 as a member of the Denver Nuggets and Boston Celtics. Before we get into tonight's discussions, just a quick reminder. The tournament is here. BetOnline is your bracket headquarters for this season with the best bracket contest out there and odd lines and info on every round right up until the national championship. You can access the most up-to-the-minute wagering information anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices and even track your bracket real-time all the way through the tournament. BetOnline. Head to BetOnline today to become part of the team, and remember to use our promo code BELIEVE for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. And guys, I think it'd be perfect to start out with the game that we just watched. Let's do a little post-game recap talk on the Boston Celtics defeating the Milwaukee Bucks in Boston, 122-119. Boston kind of took care of business those first three quarters, but Bruce, they sure made it interesting in that fourth.
Well, yeah, I mean, Tatum got off to a really good start in the first half. Peyton Pritchard came off the bench and just probably had maybe his best NBA game since I've been watching him in the few years that he's been in. You know, he's a guard who grew up in the Portland area, so maybe he took this Damian Lillard matchup kind of seriously in that he probably was had a poster of Dame in his bedroom probably growing up, whatever. You know, Boston showed you, you know, when they're making threes, they can't be beaten. But Milwaukee also showed you what a gritty team is all about. They played without Giannis. Dame played, you know, well. Bobby Portis played an incredible second half. And I don't think Boston should feel all that great about winning this game by just a few points when they had a 20-point lead in the, you know, well into the second half.
No, and that Milwaukee Bucks team did continue to fight, something we've seen a lot of times this year with this group that has fallen behind in the first three quarters of play and then come back in the fourth quarter to make things interesting and at least give Damian Lillard a chance. World B, obviously, you were able to catch this game as well. One of the highlights for Milwaukee, despite not having Giannis, was Chris Middleton, who's now put together two back-to-back games since returning to injury with strong play. 32 minutes. Going above his 30-minute limit that ESPN was reporting. Our good friend Cassidy Hubbard actually was the one that let us know about that restriction. If you're a Bucks fan, you got to be pretty happy with what Chris Middleton's doing, right?
Absolutely. I mean, he is you envisioned the big three when this whole roster was put together. It wasn't supposed to be just Lillard and Giannis carrying the weight. It was supposed to be along with Chris Middleton, who was going from the number two role or whatever you want to call it into that third spot. And, you know, you mentioned those three guys on the court together. We haven't seen it much lately, but when they're on the court together, when the Bucks are 26-11 and they beat opponents by 18 points per 100 possessions. That's the best of any three-player lineup in the league. They're really a dominating group when those three are on there. We just haven't seen it. And the other thing is, when you get all those guys together, their lineup, their regular starting lineup, which is Lillard, Giannis, Middleton, Brooke Lopez, and Malik Beasley, their preferred lineup, whatever. I mean, they outscore opponents this season by over 15 points per 100 possessions. They really, you know, kick butt. But the problem is, it's the number one five-player lineup in the NBA. But the problem is they've only played about 500 minutes, a little over 500 minutes together, and we haven't seen that group on the court since January. So the Bucks, I wouldn't get – for that reason alone, when they get everybody healthy, I wouldn't necessarily just count them out.
You know, Middleton had a super efficient offensive game. I mean, he had 22 points on 11 field goal attempts. I mean, that is the textbook definition of, yep. of being efficient. And one guy who probably won't get a ton of credit, you know, we talk about Portis. He was amazing. I thought when Patrick Beverley was on the court for Milwaukee, that was a huge difference. Even, you know, he came when he came into the game in the first half, he had like 5 points in the first minute or two. He had a really good play on defense, removed his feet, made Jaylen Brown take a tough shot. And, you know, just that's what Milwaukee needs. I mean, they need guys who are going to be like dogs on defense because they can score all kinds of points, but they need to, you know, they need that junkyard dog mentality in some of their guys.
Yeah, that's certainly the Pat Bev effect I've been mentioning here on this podcast. He certainly brings a spark off that bench, some more toughness to kind of rally that second unit. And it was good to see him do that against the best team in the NBA this year in the Boston Celtics. Now, one quick thing I want to get to here to get your guys' thoughts on, and I'll start with you, Bruce, is after the Bucks' last win, when they defeated the Phoenix Suns at home without Giannis, which was a surprise to many because the Suns were fully loaded with all their stars, Devin Booker had mentioned that the Bucks play more free without their ball-dominant superstar, and that was one of the things that kind of helped defeat the Phoenix Suns. Now, would you agree with that statement? Do you think teams can potentially play better without their ball-dominant superstar offensively, or do you think that was kind of just a lame duck excuse for why the Suns didn't take care of business in Milwaukee?
I mean, you can have a game or two, but, I mean, Giannis is the Milwaukee Bucks. I mean, he just is. And as far as the style of their play, you know, with Giannis not in there, yeah, that gives other guys a little bit more room to operate, you know, and guys get more touches. But look, I mean, he's tripping if he thinks Milwaukee's better without Giannis under the people. I mean, come on.
I agree. I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't crazy and wanted to give D-Book the benefit of the doubt before I pulled you guys on that. But World B, one possession in particular down the stretch that I think obviously the Bucks clearly missed Giannis was that offensive rebound from Kristaps Porzingis that really kind of sealed the deal there. He just had the second effort play, kind of got it above everybody, came down and just slammed it home. I mean, that's the type of play defensively where, like, that doesn't happen if Giannis is on the court.
I wouldn't think so. You know, he had 11 offensive rebounds in the game. They had to Milwaukee's 9, but yeah, that was, for me, that was the biggest play of the game. That Milwaukee had a lot of momentum. They got the missed shot that they wanted, and Giannis really stretched out, you know, his 7'2" or 7'3" frame and got that board and put it back in it. To me, that was the play of the game. And it was disappointing because, you know, it doesn't look like it when you look at the numbers that they gave up 122 points. But, you know, the Bucks defense in that fourth quarter was really really tough. They held Boston to 21 points. They put themselves in a position to, you know, win the game because of their defense, which is not easy to do against maybe the most efficient offense in the history of the league in Boston, what they're on pace for. But if Milwaukee wants to make a run, it's really, I know they need Giannis, and not just for his offense, his defensive presence and everything. They have to step up their defense if they want to win anything here. They had the third best defense in the NBA, most efficient defense in February, right after they got Doc. And in March, they have the third worst coming into Wednesday. So it's, they got to turn that around if they want. Tonight's not a good example. You're playing the best offensive team maybe in the history of the league, so that's not a fair example. But, yeah, going forward, if they don't step up their defense, it's going to be hard to get out of first round again.
I mean, they stepped it up in the second half. I mean, they gave up 69 points in the first half. Second half, they gave up 53, and they scored 63. Yep. So, you know, it just seemed like they came out of the gate, and they weren't really as dialed in to the little things. Whereas in the second half, they were totally dialed into the little things.
And Doc Rivers elected to go zone there down the stretch, and that seemed to play a factor. And we would, you know, definitely need to point out the fact that, yes, the Bucks were without Giannis, but the Boston Celtics were without Jrue Holiday and potentially their zone buster in the shooting that Sam Hauser can bring. So I think those two things for Boston side were interesting because as we saw, Bruce, Tatum did struggle in that second half. What did he go, like 22 minutes without a point?
Yeah, I mean, he had 23 at the half, and he had 23 with 2 minutes and 5 seconds left in the fourth quarter. He did end up getting 8 points down the stretch, went to the free throw line, you know, buried his free throws. But, you know, it's funny. He had 8 points in the first 4 minutes of the game, and then he had 8 points in the last 2 minutes of the game. So for, you know, the 42 minutes in between, he had like 7 points.
Yeah. Well, he made him when it counted. He hit that big three in the fourth quarter to down the stretch to really kind of put the nail in the coffin as well. So before we move on, Bruce, congratulations to your Boston Celtics defeating my Milwaukee Bucks here tonight. Now,
I just want to ask you one thing. Marquette's like a 2 seed in the NCAAs, right?
Yes, they are.
Why are you shaking your head? You don't look happy.
I do not like them as one of the top seeds. I think they're a much better team when they go into the tournament lower ranked and kind of below the radar. I feel like ever since we started getting top seeds in March Madness, good things haven't happened. So I'm a little weary after, especially after that UConn loss in the Big East tournament. I mean, boy, did we have it handed to us.
I think UConn looks like the team this year. They got like 3 pro guys like in their first 6 that I can see. You know, they're really good.
I've got Houston. We'll be quickly here before we get back to the NBA. Who do you got? Rapid fire.
It's hard to go against UConn. I mean,
okay. 2 UConns, 1 Houston.
They said, I read something on The Athletic or somewhere, that freshman kid, Castle, on UConn, they said if he declared for the draft, he'd probably be like the 3rd guy taken in the draft. He doesn't even start for them. And same with that Kentucky guy, that guard. He doesn't start. They say, oh, he's definitely top 10. They got 2, Dillingham and the other guy. I'm talking about the other guy. So anyway, enough of that amateur stuff. Let's get back to the pros.
Yeah, and we have a ripple effect going on in the Eastern Conference right now as the Miami Heat faced off against the Cleveland Cavaliers tonight. And I got to ask you guys, are the Heat lurking? Because Bam Adebayo was a late scratch in the day here today, not suiting up. They had to start Thomas Bryant at center. And Jimmy Butler did play, but the Miami Heat head into Cleveland and get the win, 107-104 behind 30 points from Jimmy Butler, 24 points from your old friend, Bruce Scary Terry. Mm-hmm. And I just can't figure this team out because, you know, Bam's out, Jimmy Butler's in, Jimmy Butler's out, Bam's in, and Tyler Hero remains out. So, World B, I'll start with you. Is this a team you think is going places right now, or is it still kind of up in the air with their injury status?
I think it's definitely up in the air. The win over Cleveland was easily their best win this month. You know, their 5 wins this month have come against, you know, the Cavaliers on Wednesday, Detroit 3 times, and Utah. It's not exactly a resume. No. If they were in the NCAA tournament field, it's not exactly the resume you want there. Their offense coming into Wednesday, you know, the last 7 games, just 106 points per 100 possessions and only 51% in effective field goal percentage, only making a third of their threes over the last 7 games. And as I mentioned, a bunch of those games came against teams like Detroit. So it's – I know they're injured, and that's perfectly valid excuse to say, hey, once we get healthy, look out. We're talking about Milwaukee. Why can't we talk about Miami in the same regard as far as injuries? But it just hasn't been – I agree with you. It's hard to figure out. You know, this week – and this week is a rough week for them. You know, they started on Monday with a loss at Philly, and they come back Wednesday on the road and beat Cleveland. And now the rest of the next 3 games, they got the Pelicans, who are red hot, Cleveland Cavaliers again, who, if they have anything, would be upset. And then you got the Warriors, who are going to be in desperate mode. So nothing's going to be easy for them down the stretch.
You know, Miami is always lurking. You know, they just are. Yeah. They're always better than you think they're going to be. Sometimes they're really, really good. Sometimes they're average when you think they're going to suck, but they don't suck. They're like 38-31 now. Okay. And they could finish anywhere from 6, 7, or 8. Most of the remaining games are at home, so they're going to have a lot of home games down the stretch. So it's time for them to kick it in gear now. I mean, you know, because if they don't finish strong in the last 12 games, then maybe they're not lurking. But if they can go like 9-3 in those last 12 and, you know, secure that sixth spot, you know, then they come into the postseason with a head of steam and they avoid the play-in.
Yeah, and I think it's all going to come about.
I'm sorry, real quick. Here's something to think about: differences between last season and this season with Miami. Last season, they were 10-11 against the top seven teams in the league, which is a good, you know, and then they went ahead in the playoffs, obviously, and beat Milwaukee, beat Boston on their way to the finals. This year, with the win on Wednesday, that improved them to 3-14 versus the top seven teams. This is not the same team we're looking at as last season. Now, if it's because of injuries, so be it. And then that will play itself out once they get everybody healthy, assuming if they do. But it's at this point, it's not the same team.
I think Hero is going to get traded during the offseason. I don't see him having a future there. But I really liked the Rozier acquisition, and he's been playing very well lately.
Yep, and you said they need to lock in there, Bruce. I think we need to keep an eye on Jimmy Butler because they're going to lock in and really push right now. It's going to be Jimmy Butler playing more games than what we're typically used to throughout the regular season. But Bam Adebayo, he is out with back soreness. Keep an eye on that as well because if he's got a bad back, then count me out on being too scared of the Miami Heat come playoff time. They're going to really need him. Now, keeping things out east here, let's talk about World B's New York Knicks and the mental toughness that they've displayed here recently. They're currently on a four-game win streak. Their last two wins have come on the West Coast. I guess last three, but their last two in particular that I want to focus on are against a Sacramento team and a Golden State team, both hostile environments for a road team, both teams that are desperate to obviously compete and try to stay in the playoff or play-in picture. And, despite the injuries that they've been having, they have certainly continued to play at a high level, Bruce. And I've been blown away with what Jalen Brunson has done to lead this team. And then you just look across the board for that roster, they're just playing great team basketball on both ends.
They also are one of the truly gritty bunches in the league. Mm-hmm. I always give extra, love to teams that I think have a gritty mindset. And they do. I mean, look, guys are dropping like flies, big guys, Ananobi, Randall, whatever. But then here comes Josh Hart just coming in there and just doing every little thing he can to help the team win. He averages 9-8 with almost four dimes, and the guy eats minutes. I mean, he plays lots of minutes out there with energy. This team, if they ever do get themselves healthy again with some time to sort of develop chemistry again before the playoffs begin, I wouldn't want to play them. They're because they can play when the pace slows down in the postseason like it does, and more set plays, not as much running. That's when a team like New York is better. So they will punch above their weight and play in that style.
World B, are you surprised with what the New York Knicks have been doing out west?
A little bit, because they're just so shorthanded. But they do have a lot of heart, no pun intended there. And they're really doing it defensively this month. It's really impressive how well they're doing. We saw it when they held Philadelphia last week under 90 points in back-to-back games. Really, kind of an eye-opener, but we know that was kind of a little asterisk by it because there's no Embiid. But then they go and they really shut down Sacramento. They really pushed them around in that fourth quarter, in that second half. And they got the job done against Golden State the other night. Number one defense, they're barely averaging, giving up a point per possession in March. And their opponent field goal, they're the only team in the league holding opponents under 50% in opponent field goal percentage this month. It's all about the defense because, with the exception of the other night against Golden State, their offense is really – they miss having depth there, OG consistently, and obviously Julius Randle, because it is all about Jalen Brunson on the offensive end.
And, they need a little bit more out of Bogey too. I'm sorry, Ross. Bogey came over and was expected to, you know, be much more of a productive scorer for them. He's averaging like 11, Ross, and I think they need more out of Bogey.
Yeah, he's certainly been slumping so far, and his adjustment to New York and the style of play that they like to do, especially defensively. But the key for me watching this Knicks team, especially on the West Coast when I have more of a chance to see them play, has been how unselfish they are on both ends of the court. Defensively, they do the little things. They gang rebound. They rotate defensively. They talk. And then offensively, they're making extra passes. And the off the ball movement has been great. We're seeing Isaiah Hartenstein spoon-feeding cutters. We're seeing mm-hmm. shooters making the extra pass to the open man and not being selfish, trying to get their own looks. And it's really paying off for this group. And they'll be a lot of fun to watch come playoff time if they can just get healthy. And speaking of health, that leads us to our next team here, and that's the Philadelphia 76ers. And my question to you guys is, will Joel Embiid ever return? And if so, which team could be in trouble if he does, Bruce?
Well, if he returns and gets a few games under his belt where he shakes off some of the rust and they end up in the eighth spot after the play-in, Boston's the team in trouble because they have never figured out a way to stop Joel Embiid. I mean, yeah. He's, you know, when it comes to like, you know, they're vulnerable to like incredible bigs. Of course, who isn't? You know, we've seen what Jokic does against them. They've had a little bit better luck with Giannis, but Embiid absolutely torches them. He lives at the free throw line. You know, he shoots at least a dozen free throws every game against Boston. So if he comes back and Philly falls to that level and ends up as eight, that's like Boston's nightmare. They'll still beat Philadelphia, but it will take them much more of an effort to do it than they thought. And just one other thing about an injured guy, another team in the East that's screwed without an injured star. Cleveland without Donovan Mitchell is utterly screwed. They are just completely screwed. I never realized how key he was, but he is the engine on that team, and they're a mess without him. Sorry, I digressed.
Oh, you're good. World B, do you think Embiid's going to return this year before the playoffs?
Everything you hear, nobody's counting it out. Mm-hmm. And Nick Nurse last week said he was confident that he would return. It's a really weird situation because when he went down, you know, they were right up there as challenging for the top in the East. I mean, if he was playing, he was going to win the back-to-back MVPs. He was having that good of a season when he went down, and it's just really obviously without a superstar like him, it's just bottomed out. I mean, they're starting Mo Bamba at center these days.
Yeah,
that's just how poor things have gotten. It's just and they're not doing anything. It's out of necessity. It's not out of his exceptional play or anything like that. They are, you know, they really struggle without MD. They're 12-22 without MD this season. What
26-8 with him.
Yeah. So if he comes back and has enough time to, you know, get himself together, I say everybody's open for business. I mean, they were one of the best teams at both ends when he was playing.
I have a question for Ross about Embiid, Ross. So we know that he's not eligible for MVP because he's not going to play 65 games. But does their record with him and without him show that he probably actually is the most valuable player in the league?
Absolutely.
As a difference maker.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that because you see other stars out there getting injured and teams rally and find ways to win. This Philly team has not found a way to win without him, despite how well Tyrese Maxey has been playing. So I think just the on the court, off the court differential in win-loss record speaks volumes for how valuable Joel Embiid is to his team and to this league. I think we're obviously missing him from an entertainment standpoint in the league too, because he always makes a lot of buzz and news and clips and things of that nature. So
you're saying he's a great actor? Is that why the entertainment factor is
a little bit? He's got some antics after the fouls and stuff. He's a fun character for sure. So he's definitely been missed in the media world. And speaking of media, World B, I think we need to bring some attention to the Orlando Magic. I think they're need some more love here. 8-2 in their last 10. They're currently on a 4-game winning streak. What have you seen from this team? You're kind of our team insider on the Orlando Magic. I'll start with you to kind of tee us off with how the Magic just keep rolling.
Well, their defense. They're the number one defense since the All-Star break. You know, giving up just 106.3 points per 100 possessions. It's not really they're defending a whole lot, their shooters, but they're forcing the most turnovers. Opponent turnover percentage is the highest in the league, 15.8%. So they're forcing turnovers. They have the best, most efficient defense. And like you said, they're 11-3 since the All-Star break, third best record in the league since the All-Star break. So that's pretty good. And the one thing is about them at the All-Star break, they've been having a good season most of the year. Their record's been really good, but it was in spite of their offense because their offense was just putrid. And it just was. There's just no other way around it. But they're really shooting the ball better. They're a top 10 team since the All-Star break in effective field goal percentage. And they were the second worst three-point shooting team at the break. Only the Spurs were worse. And now they're in the top 10 in three-point shooting since the break. So, they're shooting the ball better and their defense is really good. The schedule has been favorable. But they're winning those games. Obviously, they're not losing these games. But they got the Hornets. They had the Raptors back to back. They had the Nets during this 4-game win streak. That helps.
Yeah,
Paolo Banchero. I mean, he leads the team in points and assists. Okay, we know that he's their best player. But to me, one of the things that's really kind of unique about him, he's a second year player, right? He is seventh in the NBA in free throw attempts. Now, usually you don't see young guys in their second league that are that high up that get, they get fouled, they go to the line, they get respect from the officials because of, his hard playing style. So, that's huge. I mean, I talked a little bit, I was on with one of the guys from Milwaukee over the weekend on his radio station. And I said, one of the problems Boston has is that they don't get fouled enough. They shoot threes, so they don't go to the line and they don't get anybody in foul trouble. Well, Paolo Banchero can get people in foul trouble. He gets a lot of calls, and he earns them. So good for him.
Yeah, the thing to me that stands out with Orlando, obviously, number one, their defense, as World B alluded to there, it's just their size. They take good advantage of their size on both ends of the floor. And Paolo is a perfect example of that and how he finds ways to create mismatches and makes teams foul him. So he's getting to the foul line, and I'm sure he's earning those trips, Bruce, because I don't think he's at the superstar level where he's getting favorable calls. He's earning those foul calls, got to give him a lot of kudos there.
Now, the Wagner brothers, too, averaging 31 and 10 between them. That's pretty good.
And last but certainly not least here, I've got a believe or disbelieve question for you. And that's going to be, will Indiana's Siaka Burton get healthy and peak at the right time? Will be believe or disbelieve?
At this point, I'm going to say disbelieve. And the reason I say that is, even if they're both on the court together this season, when they play together on the court, the Pacers are getting outscored. By their net efficiency is negative 1.3, which isn't terrible by any stretch, but it's still in the negative. So they're not exactly dominating when the two are on the court together. They're just not a good defensive team, and we've known how good their offense is. It's one of the best in the league, but if they can't play better defense, it doesn't matter. That's one team that I'd like to see them healthy, but I don't know if it makes a difference.
They started a 5-game road streak Wednesday night against Detroit, and they won that game. But their next 4 games on the road are at Golden State, at the Clippers, at the Lakers, and at the suddenly warming up Chicago Bulls. Okay, so they're going to need some wins on this road trip if they want to hang on to that top 8 position that they're in right now.
And I just want to point out, when it comes to Tyrese Haliburton, we've obviously talked on the show how much he's been struggling here recently. It appears he certainly has rushed back to make sure he meets that 65-game minimum that we mentioned with Joel Embiid, obviously, for awards purposes. And it makes sense for Tyrese personally because he has the chance to earn an additional $45 million in his contract extension talks should he reach that 65-game mark and go ahead and go away with an NBA award. But it certainly looks like he's not 100% right. And without a 100% Tyrese Haliburton being the key engine to this team, kind of like Donovan Mitchell in Cleveland, I just don't see this team really turning it around despite the acquisition of Pascal Siakam. But this West Coast trip that we just mentioned is certainly going to give us a much clearer picture of whether or not we should be taking them seriously. But as for me, I disbelieve.
Have to agree now, with you.
Yep. And now as we get to the Denver Nuggets, they certainly look dominant out West. But is there anyone in the West that you guys feel could challenge them in a seven-game series come playoff time? Bruce?
No.
Okay.
No. No. I mean, look, they're going to end up with the best record in the West. They got 8 of their last 13 at home, where they're 27-6, okay? Joker, I mean, he is the MVP this year. I mean, you can give it to him right now, all right? There's nothing I've seen from anybody else in the last, you know, month of the season that's going to make a difference. And the thing about them is, I mean, the thing about Joker is he's only missed 2 games. I talked about this before the season with him. He knows his body, and he plays the game in a way where he puts the minimal amount of stress on his body. He never jumps, all right? He might jump 2 inches. He's not coming down with all that weight on his ankles and his knees and his legs. So he's just going to go out there. He's always played it at his own speed. He makes everybody better. Their starting five has been mostly healthy in Denver. They all make their free throws except for Aaron Gordon. He's like 65%. Everybody else is over 80, okay? And Michael Malone is just the perfect coach on that team. He uses his bench. He keeps everybody fresh. And, of course, the altitude in Denver makes a difference in any playoff series where they have home court.
Will B, do you tend to agree with Bruce there?
Well, I agree in the sense that they're the prohibitive favorite. I mean, There's really, you know, on the surface, it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of challengers. But I'm still going to ride the Oklahoma City bandwagon. And the reason is they've been, alongside with Boston, they've been the next best all-around team in the league all season. I know they're young. I know they're inexperienced. That you have to take your baby steps before you can really get to the elite level. All fair. No question about it. But they're a team. There's only 2 teams in this league that are top 5 in offensive and defensive efficiency. One is Boston, which is dominating, and the other is Oklahoma City. So they can get it done at both ends. I think they have enough talent on that in that lineup, young as it is, to challenge.
That would be my team if I had to choose one. It'd be Oklahoma City just because they're so young, they're fresh, they run up and down, and it would take – quite a series from Chet Holmgren to obviously stay out of foul trouble, make it tough on the Joker. But if anyone can do it, I would put my money on Oklahoma City because they just have the group that is certainly potent and can really put potentially the Denver Nuggets on their heels.
I had said around the trade deadline time that I thought they needed to make a move to bring in another like big that they could throw into the rotation because they're not a big team. And against Denver, I think they would struggle because you have Joker, you have Michael Porter Jr., who's like 6'10". You have Aaron Gordon, who is a big athletic, like 6'8", 6'9". And I think that they would do poorly on the boards against Denver. And you know, that can be the difference where I think Denver might have them.
Well, once again, you guys are forgetting Bismack Biyombo. He signed with the Oklahoma City Thunder, so don't count him out.
Mention him doesn't mean we're forgetting him.
All right. Fair enough. Now, Now, looking down further in the standings here, obviously it's hard not to see the Los Angeles Lakers just seeming to hang on for dear life in the play-in picture. And Bruce, is time running out on LeBron to win another chip?
I believe it is. I mean, look, they're 12-20 on the road, okay? And 8 of their last 13 games are on the road. So they're going to be in the top 10. But I don't see them like hitting the postseason with a burst of energy. I see them kind of, you know, running on fumes to get across the finish line and then hope they can, you know, that LeBron can turn back the clock or whatever. But here's why I think time might be running out. And again, I have no inside information. It's just a hunch. Let's say Bronny comes out of school this year and some middle of the road team in the NBA decides, we might have a chance to get LeBron if we draft Bronny. And I think that will be too much for LeBron to turn down, because if he gets drafted and wants to play with his son, he might go to a lesser team, because that's one thing that he'll do that nobody has ever done. And I think he's conscious of stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, they're going to need to catch fire in a hurry. Or maybe Bronny gets drafted by the Lakers. I don't know. But I think the clock is definitely ticking on his chance for one more chip.
Well, the team that can definitely afford to lose a draft pick, I shouldn't say lose, that's disrespectful, but utilize a draft pick on Bronny James for the simple fact of potentially getting LeBron would be the Oklahoma City Thunder. So if something like that happened, then maybe time isn't running out, and it could just be beginning for one or two more. Who knows? But it should be certainly to see if someone ends up taking Bronny James should he elect to go into this year's draft. Will B, what's your thoughts on LeBron and the Lakers? And do you think it's over there as the sun set?
It's not looking good. But I'm one of those, I'm not ready to throw in the towel just yet. Okay. I don't think they can make a run to a conference final again. I really believe that. And the reason I believe it is because their offense has really stepped up in this since the break. Third best offense in the league since the break. And they're the number two shooting team since the All-Star break, behind only the Celtics. The problem for them is their defense has suffered while their offense has excelled. While they're the third best offense since the break, they're the third worst defense since the break. So they got to fix that up. But they're getting contributions from a lot of the other guys. We've been clamoring for them to find a third guy. It looks like D'Angelo Russell can be that guy. We keep waiting for it to not be that guy, and then he comes up with another solid game. So it's not looking good, and the schedule for the next few weeks is favorable for them, but then at the end of the season, it's going to be tough. I don't think they don't have enough to get in the playoff field. I don't think they're going to slump enough to fall out. And once you get into that, you know, play-in thing, and they have a shot to get another run in them to a conference final. If they can put it this way, if they can avoid Denver on their way to the conference final. If they can't do that, if they get stuck with them in the first round, well, then they're one and done.
Yeah, fair point there. And now let's talk about some Western spice. Let's just spice things up here. Here are three spicy teams out West that I want to quickly touch on with you all. And that is, let's start off with the Los Angeles Clippers. I mean, this is a team we haven't talked about recently. Obviously, they still have their star power. They've been without Norman Powell and Russell Westbrook due to injury here as of recently. But their big three are playing. Zubac's back. And World B, I'll start with you. Do you still see them being a contender out West?
Not as much as I did at the All-Star break. They were my pick, you know, beginning of the season. It was Lakers over the Clippers to get to the conference finals, or get to the NBA finals, excuse me. I give them about a little better chance than, say, the Lakers to do it, because at the end of the day, I still got Kawhi Leonard, I still got Paul George, and I still got James Harden. That's a nice three to have. They really have struggled since the All-Star break. What are they, 6-8 since the break? And it's even worse when you break it down. They're 5-1 against teams with losing records and 1-7 against teams with winning records. So they're not beating the teams you need to beat to get ahead of them. And they're not playing like a team you really feel are contenders at the moment.
Most of their remaining games are against teams with winning records too. So they still, their schedule won't let up. They're only 4-5 since Russell Westbrook went down. Not really talked about all that much, but he provided a lot of offense for those guys off the bench and just, you know, eating some minutes. I said when they made the Harden trade earlier in the year, I still wasn't buying these guys. I thought that their ceiling was fifth in the West, and it may be a little bit higher than that, but they could very well finish fifth in the West because New Orleans is breathing down their neck right now, and they've got a head of steam, and the Clippers are kind of in second gear at the moment. So we'll see if New Orleans rolls by them, and I think they will.
Yeah,
you know, Bruce, they got back-to-back with Portland this week in Portland. So if they can't come away with a sweep of that series, then then we're really waving the white flag, but we're really have our doubts.
And I wanted to talk about the Pelicans. That's the second team on my list here. Another spicy team out west that certainly is one of those hidden spices. I mean, nobody's talking about this team, but they just continue to roll. Bruce, what are you seeing from the Pelicans that makes you feel they could be a dangerous team to face come playoff time?
Well, again, they're another team that seems like a mentally tough group to me. And yeah. Look, Zion Williamson's been playing really well. They're a rugged defensive team. They don't give up a ton of points. And when you get buckets against them, you usually have to earn them. They've done a really good job kind of keeping Jonas Valanciunas' minutes down. So he should have, you know, and last week when we had Jared Greenberg on, he talked about how that guy could be a real matchup, ace in the hole for New Orleans in the postseason. So, Look, you have CJ McCollum. You have a tough defensive team. You got Zion's healthy. And, oh, by the way, haven't even mentioned Brandon Ingram. The guy's just a bucket. I mean, you know, he can go off. So they have all these different weapons. And, they're peaking at the right time.
They certainly are. And it looks like they're tweaking their offense a little bit, We've been seeing some point forward action here for Zion Williamson, and it sure seems to be working, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, this month they're, you know, top five in offensive efficiency behind the Celtics, Lakers, and Nuggets. Those are three pretty good teams. And they're the number two team in defense behind only the Knicks, who we talked about how great they're doing. Number two behind the Knicks is the Pelicans. So I like teams that can get it done at both ends. And like I mentioned with Oklahoma City a little while ago, and the Pelicans are a team that can get it done at both ends. I mean, we talk about the Knicks and being gritty and all that stuff. I mean, when they're fully healthy, there may not be a grittier team or whatever you want to call it than the Pelicans. So I give them a really good chance. The way they're playing, they're under the radar, as we mentioned, but they got enough firepower offensively, and they're obviously a very good defensive team, to really make a run at a conference final.
They have the best road record in the Western Conference, just pointing that out. They are the top road record in the conference, even better than Denver.
And that's going to come into big play come playoff time, where you got to hit the road and win some games on the road in order to really have some success and a chance to make some big noise in the Western Conference playoffs. Now, the last one, Bruce, is the Golden State Warriors, and they're kind of like that spice in your cabinet. It's kind of been hidden in the back there. It's pretty dusty. All right, with the Golden State Warriors, are you going to throw that spice out, or – you know, are you going to keep it around a little bit longer? Have you not waved the white flag with them?
Rudy Tomjanovich famously said, never underestimate the heart of a champion. And this core is a championship core. Steph is still the best shooter in the league. He makes almost 5 threes a game, okay? Kuminga's star is rising. Still kind of young, but 16 a game in 26 minutes. Draymond Green quietly has put up, you know, very solid numbers since he's back playing instead of being suspended. But this is an aging dynasty that's basically on its last legs. If they get in to the postseason, I don't know that they'll even win a first-round series. But Hall of Famers across the board. And look, as a basketball fan, if they did get in, I would like to see them do well just for all the thrills they've given us over the years. Just a little good feelings towards them.
Yep, will be.
I was really, we watched that game on Monday, against the Knicks at home, and the Knicks were struggling offensively, really, really struggling. They really did a number on their defense. Golden State's defense had been playing well, and then they went into, you know, they ran into the Lakers and gave up 126 points, 100 possessions, and then they gave up 124 per 100 against the Knicks. Back-to-back games like that defensively really doesn't give you much optimism for them going forward to be being a factor, even if they can get out of the playing field in anything other than, you know, being a first round and out kind of team. That being said, we didn't really count them in against the Kings last year. And, you know, the Kings were the favorite in that series, and they went up and won a game seven in Sacramento. So Bruce is right. It's hard to go against. One thing they do have going for them, Steph has been struggling offensively since the break, but Klay Thompson actually has been pretty darn good off the bench since he went to them. I think he's about 20 points a game. I think he's hitting well over 40% from three since he went to the bench. That's huge for them if they want to have a shot, having a productive Klay Thompson, no matter how you have to do it. Put him on the bench, whatever it takes. You know, that's a definite positive sign in their favor.
Yeah, this is a savvy veteran group, so I don't think you can always count them out. But if I had to choose one way or the other, I'm going to take the high road and wave the white flag because don't see it happening this year. Now, before we close, I thought we'd have some fun and all give a one-liner to go ahead and close out tonight's show. And, Bruce, I'll go ahead and start with you.
Well, it looks like Alex Rodriguez's bid to buy the Minnesota Timberwolves is in a little bit of trouble. He's got some financing issues. So since his bid to become an NBA owner might be in jeopardy and Mark Cuban is no longer on Shark Tank, maybe A-Rod can call Barbara or Lori and ask for a loan.
Nice. World B?
Well, we talked about at the top of our show about the Celtics and how much they've dominated and everything. And I've been really fascinated with this stat of late. It's, you know, of all the possible ways to put the Celtics dominating season in perspective, to me, this might be the best. They came into Wednesday outscoring opponents by 11.9 points per 100 possessions. That is on pace to be the highest net efficiency in a single season since the league started keeping the stat. Those stats in, I believe, 1996-97. And the team that right now has the number one net efficiency, you know, over that span, 27 season, whatever it is, are those 97 Bulls that were at plus 11.8 points per 100 possessions. So they're on pace. Now, after Wednesday night, I think it's back to 11.8, but they're right around that pace to have one of the great dominating seasons in NBA, at least in recent NBA history, in the last quarter century.
Yep. And my five best player prop bets to look out for: Dennis Schroeder points, the volume is there. Hornets guard Micic, the points and the minutes are there for him. Devin Booker assists. The Phoenix Suns have their big three healthy at the moment. Jalen Green points. He's got his confidence, and he is taking good use of that. And point Zion Williamson. Check out his points because he has been on a tear. And with that, that will do it for this edition of the 48 Minutes Podcast on Believe, presented by Bet Online. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back with you next week to be sure you're up to date in 48 on all things around the association. Take care, everybody.